Hello?
Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah. Hello?
Hi there. This is Fran Lewis, and it's so nice. It's beautiful outside in New York. The weather is sunny and shiny out there. It's not too cold. Yeah, you need a coat, except if you're me, you walk without one. And I want to say Happy New Year to everyone. Happy New Year, Bethany.
Happy New Year, Franny.
Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to our guest, Cheryl Bradshaw. Hi.
Hi. Happy New Year to everyone.
And hi, I just wanted, and we have static. Why do we have static? Oh, yeah, the other author is dialing in right now. Her name is, I don't know, Barbara Fletcher. And we're going to talk to Cheryl first, and then we'll talk to Barbara. Barbara's book is called, she's the one that just wrote, Is Your Mother-in-Law Under the Bed? And, yeah, she can't get a, what's the whole thing here? Anyway, so we can do two things at one time. This should be fun. Okay, but before I do, last month I did a shout-out to the hospital, the doctors and nurses at Joe DiMaggio Hospital, and I would be remiss if I didn't do that again. And the reason being is because they actually saved my niece Danny's life. And if not for the caring and understanding, my niece Danny, she's got a whole lot of stuff that's wrong with her, but there's a whole lot of stuff getting better. So I want to thank them a million times for caring. And there's one other group of people I have to thank, and those are the people that live that are up here in Enrico's Bakery in Hartsdale for their support and for explaining to me the kinds of things that children with diabetes are supposed to eat and not eat, because my niece has it. So Jimmy's the hot guy behind the counter that makes me my oatmeal, keeps me thin, and I promised him I would do a shout out. So thank you guys at Enrico's. And I want to introduce the author of, you know, Cheryl, I read the book in a day, not even. I read it in what I'm going to come up with a new award starting this month. It's going to be called the Zap Award. Any book I read in an hour and I zap it through, and I read every word if you read it. I don't know. Did you read the review that I wrote for your book?
I did.
Yeah, and that was one of my good ones.
Yes, thank you.
And the title of Cheryl's book is I Have a Secret. So the secret is, we're not going to give too much away, but your main character is Sloan, right?
Yes,
this is the question I have, and this is a question I haven't asked ever of anybody. How did you create the character of Sloan? But Betty, how did you create the character traits of this particular character?
Well, I wanted her to be somebody who was relatable to other women in the demographic that would read it. And I kind of ended up finding out that the demographic goes from very young to any age, actually, which is great. But I wanted her to be strong, and that to come from her grandfather and the background and how she was raised and principles, and also from things that there are things that have happened to her in her life that have made her the way she is today. But also I wanted her to be real and flawed and not to have everything figured out. So I think that it's a good balance is good in a is nice in a character.
Yeah, she was. She was tough, let me tell you. She reminds me of me because she just crashed into things and just went and did what she wanted to do.
She does.
She barged into rooms, and I said, yeah, I could see my mother doing that. She would have done that, but I would do the same thing in order to get the job done. Now, I would never go on a cruise because I'm seasick all the time, but why did you decide with a high school reunion and a cruise? That was a really cool way to start a book.
I try to pick settings and scenes that aren't overdone, places that aren't overdone. I like to make it just unique and a little bit different. My high school reunion would have been last year as well, so that's kind of where I got the idea of a murder on a reunion cruise, and just kind of tried to just piece it together from there.
Well, I have to tell you, my high school graduation and my high school whatever was my cousin took me because no one else would. So sad. And it turned out that he was the hottest guy going, so it didn't really matter. And I never told anybody it was my cousin. So those kind of reunions are fun. I'm not sure. Is Barbara Fletcher here, too? Is she
yes,
on the line?
I am.
Hi, Barbara. Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good,
Fran.
How are you?
Okay, I'm going to talk to Cheryl, then I'm going to talk to you, because your book was so hysterical today that I figured, you know, I would like to talk to you about it. And if it could be other author that was, well, it's a whole thing. We're just glad you're here. So, what makes Sloane so relentless? Why is she like the way she is? Because she's so like me. It's amazing.
Her grandfather was in the FBI, and partially he's kind of taught her different things throughout her life about not giving up and seeing things through. So that's part of it. And the other part of it is she's dealt with some things in her own life with watching her mother go through some abuse from her father in that relationship. And all of these things have kind of shaped her into a person who doesn't really, quitting is just not an option.
Yeah, she sounds like my kind of person, yeah. The one thing my mother used to tell me was, it's you can never say I can't do it, you never say I won't, and never, ever, ever say I don't know, ever. You always have to, yeah, for real, to figure it out. So who are the other major characters in this book?
In this, well, she always has certain sidekicks that are in every book to a degree. So she's got her best friend, Madison, which is called Maddie. And this is, in I Have a Secret, she's in it not as much, but she's, Maddie is a coroner, so she can answer questions and help, she helps Sloane out with that kind of thing. Giovanni is a new relationship, a man in her life that she's kind of started dating, and he ends up getting involved in the book. He ends up being in the same area that she is when she's investigating. And so, and then we have all the main characters. We have some of the side characters that are in the town, the people that get murdered. And then, and you've got Doug Ward. He gets murdered on the cruise ship. And his wife is a big part of the story because as it unfolds, without giving away too much, there are a lot of secrets. And it seems that everyone that she comes in contact with, that she's, as she's trying to investigate why people are getting murdered and what's happening, everyone has their own secret in their own way that they've been keeping.
Well, that's what makes the book so good. And like I said, I'm going to come up with a new award this month because between your book and Barbara's book, the Zap Award, I mean, I know the truth of the matter is everybody laughs, but I can read a book in three books in one day, maybe more. It depends on my eyes. But sometimes I just sit down and I look at a book and I'll say, okay, there's only 150 or 200 pages. Okay, this is great. I'll do this one first. And it could be 17 books in front of me, and that book will have just come, which is what happened with yours. And Barbara's book came yesterday, and I'm saying, okay, there were 16 books here. Okay, I'm reading that one. Sometimes it's what the book is about, because they're both so unique and so different that I said, you know, how many murders can you read? How much of this can you read? How many memoirs can you read? And then you get these two crazy sisters that become detectives in her book, and then they reminded me of my mother and my aunt. Definitely. I mean, seriously. So I'm going to ask Cheryl two more questions, then I'm going to introduce Barbara, and she's going to tell you something about her book. We're going to move back and forth. We're going to get a little spice in this show today, people. Okay. So how does she convince? She goes, she's on the ship, and she knows that there's something going on. Now, this scene had me on the floor. How does she convince the man in the surveillance room to let her see the tape of Doug's death? She goes about it a little extreme. I was on the floor. I go, oh, my God.
It is that, about, it, all that matters is what it takes to get what she needs. And she is willing to go the distance. So
she went more than the distance.
I mean, I think she didn't end up like, you know, she still kept her integrity about her in a way while she didn't compromise herself, but it seemed that she was going to. You know, she kind of knows how to get what she needs when she wants to. She knew if she saw that tape and she could see what happened, she would be able to find out, you know, because Doug Ward had gone missing on the ship, and she knew where he had been last seen. And so she knew she saw the tape, maybe she would get some idea of where he was. And so she was just all about doing what she had to do to get there.
Notice that his wife didn't, though. How rude. What can I tell? So tell us a little bit. I'm going to ask Barbara a question in a minute. Who is Trista? And when did she decide to wake up about it?
Trista is Doug Ward's wife, and Doug, he gets murdered on the cruise ship in the beginning of the book. He's stabbed and tossed overboard. And Trista is very introverted. She's not the type of person that really likes people to know her personal business, but as she gets talking to Sloane, and she's someone that Sloane went to school with, and she was a former classmate of Sloane. So there's some history there of just knowing who each other is. And as Sloane kind of delves deeper into talking to Trista, she ends up finding out more about what was going on with Doug that maybe not a lot of people knew, and how that maybe could have led to people not liking him, or, you know, coming up with some answers. And so she has a big role to play in secrets that she's keeping herself.
Everybody's got a secret in this
yep.
book. So mm-hmm. Barbara.
Yes.
Oh, you know, I thought I was dealing with Thelma and Louise with this one. I was on the floor. Edith and Edna are hysterical. Yeah, Edith, they're hysterical. They're absolutely, these two sisters are so out of it. They're so funny, Edith and Edna. How did you create them? And
well,
tell everybody who they really are.
In the early 70s, right after I moved to California from Massachusetts, my mother and her sister came for a month-long visit. Well, those two, I couldn't take them anywhere without them getting into some kind of mischief. They had myself and my two daughters laughing all the time. They were just so funny. My whole mother's family, the Carlson family from Sweden, they had the best sense of humor, and I really missed that. Mm-hmm. You know, they were so much fun. And that's who those two characters are, my mother and her sister.
Well, I have to tell you, they remind me of my mom, Ruth, that passed away, and my aunt over, because they were the two wackos of the family, because you would never know what they were going to do and what they were going to say.
Yep.
I mean, my mother would walk into a restaurant if somebody was eating something. She would go up to the person and go, "So is it good? Did you like it? Did the chef make it right? What are you eating?" Or worse, she would say to me, "The lady over there is wearing those great shoes. I want you to go over and ask her where she got them so I don't get embarrassed if she doesn't answer me." I swear. I mean, yeah, there was my father's side of the family is where I get my wacky sense of humor. But my mother, you never knew what she was. I mean, she would make a U-turn in the middle of a highway and say, "When I was going the wrong way, don't worry about it. I'll just, you know, change my mind." Seriously. So poor Ellen. How does she at the beginning of the book, she finds out that Roger is cheating on her, and she's clueless, right?
That's right.
The poor thing is clueless.
Yep,
so,
and Mommy wants to protect her.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what mothers do. They protect her, but they go a little bit overboard.
Yep.
to protect her.
Oh, yes. It's just exactly what my mother and her sister would have done.
Yeah, my mother probably would have done that also, except that she probably would have told the police department how to run the case and what they were supposed to do and what they were doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But who is Gloria, and what's her role in this? We don't want to give away too much.
Right. Well, Gloria is the woman that Ellen's husband is having an affair with, but she's not just an affair. She is out to bilk Roger out of his money. And
yep.
they have a plan, her and her boyfriend, because she also has a boyfriend on the side, are planning on eliminating Roger once she gets him to marry her. And I will say that I am very interested in reading. I have a secret. I am a cruise counselor.
Oh, well. See, I matched up the right people. You have to read
yes.
the book, because you're absolutely, it's fantastic. And I only interview people with the best books in the whole world. Trust me.
Wonderful. Glad to hear that. I am, as soon as I hang up, I am going to Amazon and order I Have a Secret. I can't wait to read that.
Oh, you have to read it. It's so good. Right, Cheryl? I mean, really. And I'm waiting for Cheryl to write the next one. I can't wait to write the next episode of Edna and Edith Easer also.
Well, it's finished, and I'm just right now having it edited by the two smartest women I know, my daughter and my granddaughter, actually. And it's amazing how one will pick errors that you know, she'll call me and say, Mom, read this sentence to me, and I'll read it to her. She said, Mom, read it again, and then I'll read it word by word, and I'll say,
oh my God,
I forgot a word, didn't I? And she picks that up. My other, the granddaughter, she picks up totally different things. She'll email me and she'll say, Grandma, why did you have this happen when you didn't do anything to lead up to it? And I'll say, oh, yeah, right. So then I have to go back in and rewrite and put it in.
Can I borrow them for my next book? I could use them for the next one, writing.
I tell you, they are totally amazing. They have made it a complete family affair.
My sister passed away last year, and she was the one that edited my books. And it was, you know, the she would say, you know, your character didn't do this, or maybe you should be a little bit more positive. I go, but,
exactly.
You know, Mom really wasn't positive. She made me get 100 on a test, and she made me write the test over, for real.
Yep.
So
yep.
She would say, well, she didn't do it to me. I said, that's because she liked you better, and she
uh-huh.
didn't like me. But we're laughing. So this is hysterical. So Cheryl, tell me something. Why doesn't anyone realize that Doug is missing? I mean, the guy's dead, and nobody cared. Nobody realized he was gone. We don't want to tell her too much because she has to read the book.
Right.
The scene in the beginning, where he goes outside on the deck and he's kind of reminiscing about how he wishes he never came on the cruise in the first place, kind of takes place during a party. When everyone is gathered together, and no one realizes he's missing at first until he's called out as, can the old prom king and queen come out and start the first dance? And then he doesn't come forward, and people are wondering, well, where is he? Did he, you know, is he gambling? Is he back in his cabin? Where did he go? And so, you know, it's not everybody's kind of partying and have a good time together and reminiscing with each other. And their foremost thing on their mind is not that he possibly, they're on a cruise ship. They don't think anything could happen. And most times it never does. So that is just the first few chapters are on the cruise ship. And then it switches from there.
Well, it's like, Sloan was determined to find out, you know, what was going on and what was not going on anyway. Next question. Who was Heather, and why was she so bent on getting close to Doug? See, she's another person that, you know.
Heather is a few years behind Doug when they had gone to school mm-hmm. together. And he was the manager of the bank in town, and she had come in to open an account and remembered him after so many years just from being in school, and she befriends him, and they kind of start up. She likes him, and so she's trying to kind of get involved in his life, even though he has a wife and family, and she's being prompted to do that by another friend that was also a classmate. And so she's just kind of trying to cause problems, basically.
Well, basically, that brings me to Barbara's book, because that's exactly what's going on there. Because Gloria and Roger want to set up Ellen to make it look like she's cheating on Roger, right?
That's right.
So who's Brad? Man, he's cute. Let me
Isn't
tell
he?
You.
He's a hunk and a half. He's my dream.
Yeah. You really made him. You know, you haven't lost it, I'll tell you. This guy is really hot. And it's like,
yes.
Tell everybody about Brad. But, you know, basically, you know, I don't know if Ellen finds out the truth, but who cares? You know, what the heck?
Yeah, she has no intentions on having an affair on her husband. She's really into the marriage vow thing. But she cannot help herself with Brad, which is why her mother and aunt, when they found out she was going to have dinner with Brad, they said, uh-oh, we know what's on her mind tonight. And they had to go there and stop her from doing what she had every intention on doing.
Well, you can't sort of blame her, because she sort of, in a sense, figured out at the beginning that he was being really bad. But she didn't quite get it. Every time he was supposed to see her, he didn't show up.
Right.
Which really wasn't very good. But
right.
I think, and then these two break and enter and they get away with it. Oh, my God. I mean, Edna's son is a riot, and he's got a good sense of humor in the Hampton and the police department. So what happens when they find out? Well, basically they were trying to get it so that Roger wouldn't have to give her any money.
Right.
They wanted all the money. But
that's
the guy
right.
that's her boyfriend, Gloria's boyfriend, we're not going to say too much about him. He thinks he's smart, but he's not too bright.
He's a dummy.
He's a bumbling idiot, but he's funny. It's like every time he thinks he's got one step ahead to get rid of all of them, it was hysterical.
Right, and the whole thing boils down to they had no idea that somebody was watching them.
Yeah, they had no clue. I mean, didn't they see the two cars that they were going back and forth in? They were so oblivious, and even they were all oblivious. It's so sad.
They thought they were getting away with everything, and they didn't know, but they had two little old ladies following them everywhere and finding out what they were doing.
And they were even in disguise, which I really thought it was hysterical. But when they meet the two guys in the bar, that was a riot, too.
Yes.
That was absolutely right. So I figured out the ending.
They had to go to Miami for some R&R&S.
R&R&S, yeah, I like the S part.
And what does the S stand for? Well, sunshine, of course.
Oh, of course, whatever. So we have a character, and I have a secret that likes to taunt and torture Tristan. That's Candace, right?
Yes, Candace back in school was the girl that everybody has in school, and probably more than one. She's the girl that will try to take everyone's boyfriends, and the girl that just tries to upscale all the other girls. And so really in all these years, she's not too much of a different person than she was back then. I mean, some people evolve and change, and it's nice to see, but not Candace. Mm-hmm. And so she really doesn't have a moral code. She doesn't care if people are married now. If she wants to be involved with someone, she'll go for it. And she tries to get in Sloan's way and at first, and then she wants to stay out of her way because she realizes she's dealing with someone who's a lot tougher than she was in high school. Mm-hmm. You know, Sloan kind of kept to herself more when she was younger, but now that 20 years has gone by, she's much more tough, and she's just a person that you really don't want following you around. And that's what Sloan will do if she needs to get answers that she's not getting. So that's the relationship between Candace and Sloan. They basically it's a taunting relationship on Candace's side, and Sloan has enough of it, and then she gets the information she needs that Candace is hiding.
Well, she's really good at what she does, though. So I have a question for both of you that's not on my piece of paper here, but I've got tons of questions. So if Sloan could tell somebody, Cheryl, about your writing or about you, what would she say about why people should read I Have a Secret? If the character said to you, this is a great book, what would the character of your book tell everybody about your writing and about why they should read the book? What would Sloan say?
It is a hard question.
Yeah,
they asked me that about my book too.
Sloan would say that what she has going for her in me writing her is that I am always trying to bring something fresh and new to the table.
Yeah,
and so Sloan would probably say that I allow her to be in locations that has never been in a book before. Yes, cruises have been in a book before as a main theme, but some of the places she goes, they haven't. And so she gets to go and she gets to have experiences that are, she's been compared to other people. Sloan has been compared to different characters in different books, but she's also unique herself. And so and another thing is that I allow Sloan to do what she wants, which isn't always what I had in mind. I started out, I started out when I started writing with I am all about lists and having everything planned out. That did not work, and it didn't feel right, and I didn't like it. And so I threw that out and just sat down and I just wrote. And so what they want to say, that particular day and where they want to go, that's what happens. Well, she gets to kind of charter her own boat. It keeps it creative and interesting for me too, because when I'm done writing for the day, I almost always have written something that's different than I thought I was going to write that day.
That's amazing, because it's sort of like the character gets inside of you and tells you what to say. So
yeah,
like
I just try to think about what they were really thinking and feeling at the time and where they would really be going and how they would be developing, and then I allow them to go to that place.
That is amazing. Now, with Edith and Edna, which one is really you, Barbara? Either one of them? Or is it a combination?
I would probably be Edith. I know my mother would be Edith. And her sister would be Edna. She was that type of person. And when I write, I try to get them into daring situations, something that I wouldn't do, but definitely Edna would do. My aunt would do, definitely. And because of the humor in the family, I love humor, absolutely love humor. I can see humor in just about any situation. And I try for them to have the same outlook. I try to make it exciting and creative, which you will find in the second book when Edna gets captured.
Oh, that's going to be a riot. That's going to be a riot. Oh, my God.
Yes.
That is funny, because these two, I mean, you never know what they're going to do. I mean, I read a book yesterday. Of course, I read two books yesterday. I was on slow day, just two. What can I say? Deadly Policy by Mitzi Kelly. And it's about an 82-year-old woman, a woman in her late 40s, and one that's 65 that take on the police department. And they solve a murder and they solve cases. I was on the floor because I'm far from 82, but the 82-year-old one reminded me of me, because she just goes and barges into the police department, tells them what she thinks, and if they don't listen to her, she gets really nasty. And it's funny. And I could see Edith and Edna going in there. But she was lucky because she has Eddie, right?
Yes.
And Eddie's her son. So how come he puts up with all this? Why doesn't he tell her, like, you know, don't do it, and yet he tells them they're doing a good job?
Because it does absolutely no good. He knows that. He knows if he tells them don't do that, they're going to say, okay, and then under their breath they're going to say, let's go do it.
Yeah, my mother would do that also.
Very independent, these two ladies.
I can imagine. You know, that just proves to everyone that you don't have to be 25 to get the job done, and just because you're over 30 doesn't mean you're dead and you can't
do anything.
That's exactly. These are great books for young people. These are great books to prove that older people and people that are in their 20s think that people in their 30s are 107 and can't do anything. Or when you walk into the doctor's office, they ask you if you can hear. If you tell them you're over 25, seriously.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? You are there. So we've got another character, Cheryl. Who is Alexa?
Alexa is Doug and Trista Ward's daughter. And I have to be so careful when I talk about her, because she ends up being the key to solve the mystery. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know who she is, but things come out as Sloan gets people to talk or finds things out, or she figures things out, and she realizes that the daughter, something that had happened a very long time ago, and then this daughter was born, and it all ties into why there are murders taking place and what is the motivation for the person who is going around and killing Sloan's former classmates. And so it all kind of comes to a head with Alexa, the daughter, at the end of the book, and then the big secret is revealed.
We can't tell anybody that, because Barbara's going to read your book. And I put your review on my review site, and I'm going to put Cheryl's book on my review site, my review again on my review site, which is called Everybody Reviewing Your Book on Facebook. And I have about 25 people that review books there. And the only guideline that I have is that they can't post anything negative. There's so many nasty reviews out on Amazon and so many negative things that people say that this site is mine. And before anyone can post something, they post it, and then I have to approve it. And I didn't do that at the beginning. Yeah, I approve mostly everything, if you know, pictures and events and links to where you buy a book or contests and stuff. But basically, everybody has to remember that it's a site for book reviews and for asking for reviews. And, yeah, somebody posted something one day, and it was negative, and I deleted it. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here. There's like a buzzing sound in there.
Yeah, I hear it.
Yeah, I can hear it too.
Yeah, I hear it. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Yeah. Somebody's mowing a lawn or something. I just hope it doesn't. It's a good for the next book, everybody. That's a new weird sound. Basically, if we get disconnected, which I hope we don't, just you know, call back in and pray that we get there. Okay.
Okay.
So we have Barbara. Tell me something. When you decide, what made you decide to write this book, and what are some of the paraphernalia that our two detectives had to go out and buy in order to not let anybody know that they were there, so that they wouldn't see them coming?
Okay. Well, first of all, they both worked for a detective agency owned by two gentlemen that these two ladies ended up falling in love with and marrying. So they had a background in investigating, and they enjoyed breaking and entering and all the illegal stuff,
that's recording fun.
And all that stuff when they were working for them. But then both their husbands died. They ended up selling their homes, pooling their money, and buying a mobile home in a senior mobile home park together. And okay, I forgot the question.
what is some of the paraphernalia that they needed? Because they went out and they went and bought all this stuff, and I was like, I've read so many detective books, now I would know what to buy, but they had this archaic stuff when they first started to do the first surveillance thing.
Right. Right, they had a 1-megapixel camera.
Yeah.
That was from the agency. I mean, the agency was back in the 80s and early 90s. So some of the things they had were just, they were getting frustrated. So they went online. They've got computers now. So they went online and they found a place to buy all kinds of investigating equipment. So they bought one of those, I don't even know what it's called now offhand, where they could listen to conversations. And they bought a couple of those. They bought a 14 megapixel camera. And, God, I can't think half the equipment. They spent over $1,000 on buying new and updated equipment. And then they said, oh, boy, let's go play. And they went and used it on, of course, Gloria and Jeremy, who, again, didn't know anybody was watching.
I think the funniest scene was when she put the voice recorder under Roger's CD, set the alarm, and she had to go back and get it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. But I was waiting for them to get a computer hacker to hack into somebody's website or something like that. I was waiting for somebody to hack into something, because I could see Edna and Anita hiring somebody to eliminate the records of somebody on a computer. I could actually see the two of them do it.
Uh-huh.
That's hysterical.
Possibly down the line.
it's my weird mind of always wanting to learn how to do it myself, to be very honest. That's something I always wanted to, you know, become great at, is, you know, hacking into something. That'll be fun. So
now their greatest accomplishment is balancing on a railing of a hotel 5 stories above the ground.
That was a riot. Now me, I would have acrophobia. I know, and the fact that they didn't fall over, and yet when Rogers hears them, they say, oh, we're just fine, don't worry about it. The fact that he was so dense and didn't realize that they were there.
And how did you get
there.
This information? I found it laying in the street.
Yes. And it didn't even dawn on any, oh, I mean, the police just think they just whatever. It's, and poor cop to the detective, he's like, yeah, okay, give up. I'm just going to let them do it. Mm-hmm. And then he tells him at the end, oh, yeah, I'm going to need your help to solve the case.
Uh-huh.
And the two of them go, yeah, we're in. I was like,
yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Oh, my God. It was funny. So let's get back to I have a secret. I don't want to get too much into the secrets. Now, Giovanni is a really cool guy. He's really hot, too, and he's connected, right?
He is connected. He is like the king of connected. So
you can sense it, but she does. He's like stifling her too, in a sense too.
Well, you know, he's very into independent women and women having their freedom, but he also likes to keep an eye on things, and he has men to do that. Like he has them. Basically, he has mafia ties. There, it's out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's out in the book, too. But, you know, the thing is it, as a reader, what I'm wanting the readers to see is, yes, he's very good looking, and he's very nice, and he's got a lot of great qualities. But he has another side that she's not really seeing because, He lets her see all the nice stuff and who he is as a person, one side of him, but she doesn't really get to see his world beyond that. So she's off doing her thing and he's off doing his thing, which isn't always a great thing, and maybe it's not him personally that's doing things that aren't so great, but it's because of something that he may order or ask someone to do that it gets done. And so In the first four books, we basically are dealing with, as she finds out a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more about him, though readers may like him or dislike him. There's, you know, a lot of people like him. Some people don't like him. You know, it's all about, like, as she learns about him, how is this going to affect with their relationship and where she eventually wants to go once she finds out. She knows. She just doesn't really want to accept that lifestyle, like that he really can be so different than the person she sees because he's so wonderful with her.
Yeah, she actually is so independent that basically he tries to stifle her, and he always comes to her rescue, but I don't think she really wants him to come to her rescue all the time because she can handle it
perfect.
By herself.
She can, and that is another thing that I wanted readers to kind of feel when they're reading that is that, yes, she does kind of like having people around sometimes, but she doesn't like people getting involved in her way of doing things. The reason why she solves cases, the reason why she gets things done is because she doesn't have to go by, like, what the law. She has to a point, but she doesn't answer to anyone. To accept herself, as long as she's not really getting caught and she's doing things. It's not like she's a police officer and she knows she's going to get in trouble because she didn't follow procedure. So she has a little bit more leeway, and she doesn't really like people stepping in and telling her how to do something when she always gets results.
I know. I wouldn't like that either. You see, neither would Edna or Anita allow them to even let the police department tell them what to do, would they?
No.
No, they wouldn't, right? They would just tell you, like, it's my way or forget it. It's just the way it is. And Sloan is the same way. So I could see the three of them together solving the case. That might be hysterical. Who knows? I would wonder what would happen if there would be a young detective and two seniors or something like that actually solving a case together. I mean, those two make Jessica Fletcher look like she wasn't really with it. And, I mean, and then we got the Cagney and Lacey in them too. My God, this is like it's hysterical. So, I mean, my question at the beginning of my review was, what do you do when you find out your husband's cheating on you and he doesn't listen? You tell your mother.
Yep.
Because what else would you do? But
that's
what would
right.
have happened? What would have happened if Ellen wasn't clueless? How do you think she would have handled finding out the truth about Roger? And those two at the end, I'm not going to say what happened. I mean, that was really clever, the way they get around him at the end. But what would have happened if she really realized that, you know, my husband is not that great and he's cheating on me, and so what if I have a little fun? What would have happened if she wasn't so clueless? You think something different would have happened?
Well, first of all, they had a prenup.
Yeah.
And in the prenup, if he was caught cheating on her, she was eligible to get 50% of everything. If she was caught cheating on him, she would get nothing.
Mm.
Okay? So unless she had proof, I mean, to suspect is one thing, but she would have to have real proof, and what she saw at the hotel was not enough proof. So actually, with the prenup, she had, there was nothing she could do unless she could find out for sure that he was cheating on her, which meant that she herself would have had to do what her mother and sister did, but she didn't. Her sister, her mother and sister convinced her that it was nothing.
Mm.
It was nothing. It was just probably a client. He meets with clients at hotels all the time, and they convinced her. But they weren't convinced because they knew him.
They were not naive, and she just didn't want to really see what was really in front of her.
That's it,
so,
right there. Yep.
Well, what was it about Brad? I mean, here they thought they came up with this great plan that, you know, he's going to have lunch with her, blah, blah, blah. And it was an instant. The minute she saw him, it was like, okay, forget about Roger. This guy is really cute, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So what in the back of her mind, she didn't want to do anything wrong.
Right.
So let's say what happened at the end, we're not going to tell anybody what happens to him, didn't happen. If they had been alone, whatever, do you think that she would have just, like, said, oh, the heck with it? Or would she just realize it's wrong to do that?
Well, it all came down to she knew she wouldn't be able to resist him if he made any kind of advances toward her. And this is why she was afraid to be alone with him. She was afraid to drink champagne because she knew how she got when she drank champagne. And these wedding vows just kept, I mean, she would argue with her mother about her wedding vows because they meant so much to her. And it was just really confusing to her. I don't want to do anything, but I can't resist this guy.
Well, then she, you know, tabled it in the back of her mind as to what she actually saw, because she actually believed her mother when she said, that was just a client, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just the gesture alone, yeah, just the gesture that she saw alone. And then when she sees her and she says to her, don't I know you? Didn't I see you from somewhere before? It didn't quite register that was the lady from the hotel.
Exactly,
that she saw, yeah.
Yep,
and
she knew she had seen the woman before, but she saw her for such a short time in the lobby of the hotel and then when they walked out to the car. And she did take pictures, but it never occurred to her that this is the woman that I saw with my husband.
No, and it never occurred to her that there was somebody following her and somebody following them.
Yep.
It's like, I'll tell you, I could see Lucy and Ethel doing it, definitely.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Something I'd do.
Oh, okay.
This is something I would do. If I found out my husband was having an affair, if I suspected it, hey, I'd be donning a wig, I'd be borrowing somebody's car, and I would be following him around.
I'd
do it to heartbeat.
I would also, as a matter of fact, I'm married 15 years, and I have to tell you, I would do it in more than a heartbeat if my husband just brought in two more books for me to read. Huh? Thank you so much. The postman just brought in 18 and 19. It's just staring at me. I don't even know what they are. I'm not even going to look.
Wow.
But, yeah, I went to the dentist 2 weeks ago, and I was telling Bethany before, my niece has been really sick, and I guess I'm a really calm person most of the time, except when I'm not. And I don't know, the nurse said something that got me really annoyed. And I just said to her, instead of standing and having a conversation with my husband, why don't you try just like doing your job and get out of there? And she got on my nerves because I said she was getting a little too friendly or too something. And I said, isn't the dentist supposed to be doing, you know, a cleaning? And you're supposed to be over there.
Right.
I said, so why don't you go over there, and I'll go over there, and while there's a break, I'll go talk to my husband, and you don't have to keep him company, and it's okay.
Just
in case
I can tell you this, my husband was having breakfast with I didn't know who, and I donned a blonde wig one time, and I went. I honestly did this. I went to the restaurant, and I sat at the other end of the restaurant, and he never even knew I was there.
Oh, you see, he goes wherever I go. As a matter of fact, you see, he gets annoyed because when he has to go to work in the morning, he calls him when he gets there, so I know that he's there. And then it's a thing that my mother started. When you get somewhere, you have to call somebody to let them know you're not dead. And if you're going to be 1 minute late and you are dead, just let them know that you're dead so that we know you're not going to call.
Right.
She would do that. And if you got, you know, if you didn't have your cell phone with you, forget it. And you're going to be grounded for life if you don't call me to tell me that you're alive and not dead.
Uh-huh.
She would do stuff like that. I mean, I went to school with a friend, and he would pick me up in the morning, and she would come down to make sure that it was Mike and it wasn't anybody else that I was going to school with. I mean, she went as far as one day to call my principal and say, Fran's not going to be on time for her reading group because I really don't like what she's wearing and she doesn't look professional, so she's going to go up and change. She'll be a little late.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yes, she did. I was a reading and writing specialist, and I came down one day. She didn't like my skirt. And I said, but Mom, my reading group is coming. School started at 9, but I was in school at 6:30, 6:45, because these children were coming for extra help. And
mm-hmm.
I said, the kids are going to be out there. They're going to bring their bread, whatever. She says, just call the school and tell them you're going to be 10 minutes late because you're not going like that. You just didn't argue with her. I mean, these are the crazy things that she would do. So I could picture myself doing what you did. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I probably would stick my foot out and trip her, too, maybe, if she didn't dare to get even that close. I mean, I've gone to work with him once in a while. One girl came over and said, you know, I need him to help me do something. I didn't say anything. She came over the third time, and I said to her, you know, I bet you're smart enough to figure it out yourself this time, so why don't you just do it?
There you go.
Yeah, you got it. You're right. Because, mm-hmm. you know, after all. So tell me something. This is a question for Cheryl. What would Sloan have done if somebody came on to Giovanni? Do you think she would have, you know, taken her out?
Well, they're newly dating. And so they haven't been together too long. But she would, this is what Sloan would expect. She would be looking at Giovanni to see how he handled the situation. Because Sloan is not about being disrespected. So if someone is coming on to Giovanni and she's witnessing it maybe from across the room or something, and he's not handling it, like he's maybe flirting back with the girl, it would be just as much, the girl would get just as much heat as Giovanni would get in the situation, because she expects people to just, you know, in a situation. I think when that happens, if a girl comes on to a man and he's clearly with somebody else, the man needs to shut it down. And so that is exactly what she would expect before she kind of came in and interfered. She would definitely hang back for a minute and just see how he handled that. I think that says a lot about a person's character.
That's true, because if they, you know, think it, some men think it's like, oh, it's wonderful. I mean, here Jeremy is telling Gloria, yeah, go after Roger, and then he gets upset when she goes after Roger. And then Roger sees that, you know, maybe Ellen might like somebody else, and he has a conniption fit.
Yeah, he can't handle it.
Yeah, he can't handle it because here, you know, you're not God's gift to the universe anymore.
Yeah, he's so got such an ego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and
so does the other one.
He can't handle that his wife could be possibly interested in another man.
Well, that someone could possibly like her, yeah.
Yeah, he has a really hard time dealing with it.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Poor baby.
Isn't that poor baby is right. So when you write the next one, are you bringing Brad back?
Yes.
Oh, good. I got to know what happens next. Oh,
yes.
This is so cool.
Yes.
I really hope I get it before it comes out.
Book number two is my favorite.
Oh, okay. So it's going to be. I definitely have to get yours, and I have to get Cheryl's next one also when it comes out. And
well,
I'm excited. I just got Iris Johansson's new book is coming out in April, and they just sent it to me.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, it's staring at me, but I have like a whole bunch that I have to read, and I don't know what those two are over there, but I'm not even going to look until later to find out. Yeah, and I just got James Patterson's new books too, but you know what? It goes in order of which ones come first. So it doesn't matter who it is that who the book, you know, the author is. It matters which ones come first. Actually, like I said, Barbara's book came yesterday. There were 17 staring at me, and I said, "Nah, that one wins. It's got to, you know." Sometimes it's just because there's not as many pages in the book, and sometimes you just open the book and go, "Wait a minute, I'm going to sit here and read it." So I got up this morning at about 4 to do something for whatever reason, and I went out for about a half an hour at about 9, and then when I came back, I just finished the book. I said, this is hysterical. Oh, my God. It was just, you know, I just thought of my mother actually made a U-turn, and she went through six red lights and one-way street, seriously, and these three cops came up, and she literally convinced them not to give her any tickets.
Oh, my God.
Oh, she was, yeah, and I was with her, and she said, "Do me," and I had a headache, and she said, "Do me a favor, flirt with the cops and do something, because I know if you do something." So they came over and they said, "You know, Ruth, you're not wearing your seatbelt," and she had just had surgery. "Can't you see I have a scar? That's going to hurt me." Well, by the time these two got done with her, it was like, you know, Edith and Edna, and they just looked, they forget it, whatever. They did just let her go, and I said to her, "Mama, you can't go back down that street because the street's one way." She says, "Don't worry about it. They won't even see me." I was like, "Oh my!" I used to die. I go, "Ma, I think it's time to take the keys away." She had Alzheimer's, and it was just the beginning, and we didn't realize it. And I mean, yeah, it was bad. And she would do stuff that was like kind of dangerous. And I said to my sister one day, I said, "You know what? We're gonna have to watch her." Because she would pick me up from school, and the kids would come in and go, "Mrs. Lewis, your mother's outside in the orange car." And she said, "Now would be good." We didn't say that. We wouldn't say that to you. But your mother said, "Now would be good if you would show up." I go, "But doesn't she understand that I'm the dean and I have to do this?" She said, "No." She said, "Just to tell you, it's good because unless either that or you're going to walk home."
Well, I tell you, when my mother and her sister came out to visit, I was singing with a band at that time, and I took them to the United Airlines Club that night watch my band play. And I'm standing up there singing, and I'm watching these two ladies in their late 60s sitting in the back of the room throwing ice cubes at people.
Oh, God.
I'm just up there shaking my head, and then people would turn around and look, and there's my mother and her sister just talking to each other like, "I don't know what's going on." Mm-hmm. And it was nothing to take them to a restaurant, and they'd find, I don't know, anything on the table. They'd sit at opposite ends and blow it back and forth the table to each other. I couldn't take them anywhere.
It sounds like my nephew used to clear off the table when we came to lunch. I literally had to clear off the table because he would take the sweet and low and the sugar and make a potion for the waitress. And he used to get me to, I used to help him, though, actually, because it was fun. Take the ketchup, the garlic, whatever was on the table, and we made a potion for the waitress so that, you know, he wouldn't get bored. And he's 42 now, but we had fun when he was little. We used to do all sorts of things, hunt frogs and salamanders and get into trouble constantly because no one else would do something but his wild aunt. So until this day, we do crazy things. But, yeah. I mean, what's so my aunt and my mother and your mother probably too would take all the sweet and low and the equal and make sure that they took it home because in case they needed it.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't, yeah. And if we had bread or whatever, my aunt would say, you know, it's to go to waste. It's, you know, you don't waste food, and they would just pack up everything that was on the table. And the poor waitress would come by and say, "Well, you know, well, where's the sugar?" "No, you didn't bring enough." And I mean, I literally wanted to crawl under a rock and hide sometimes, but you had. I mean, it's funny.
Yeah,
it is funny. So, so what's next for you? What's your next project?
Well, I actually published in November a book called Stranger in Town, and that is the next Lynn Monroe book. So that is out. And,
oh, so why didn't she send that to me? I'm surprised.
Well,
didn't
because
do that.
When we were first working on the campaign, we were working on I Have a Secret, and I wanted to do some things for that. And I think that I was not planning on Sinner or Stranger in Town being published as soon as it was, and then it kind of just happened. So that's what happened. And so we also had a strange mix-up with the shipping of the books, too, so I had to send them to her a couple times before she got them. But so that is just come out, And then I am currently starting a new series, which is more of a paranormal, a ghost story.
Oh, I love paranormal.
And Sloan will continue.
Oh, nice.
But
oh,
I'm going to kind of tag team a few different series. I'd like to, there's three that I'd like to have. And so I'll keep writing Sloan's, but I'll just kind of take turns with some of the other projects that I'm starting on as well. I write pretty fast. And so it's a little bit hard for PJ to keep up with me, I think.
Yeah, I actually have a paranormal section in my book number three.
Where they deal
with an angry ghost.
Oh, that's even better. I never read them until I started to review books. And then, you know, someone said to me, will you read paranormal? Yeah, you know what? I read everything.
Well,
I went on a ghost hunt
in September and October.
Really?
To a hotel in San Francisco, the San Remo Hotel. And I'm walking around taking pictures, and I didn't look at them. I just took all these pictures. And then somebody went in the kitchen and came back out and said, I was just told to eat in the kitchen. It just said, eat.
Oh, my God.
So I said, where's my camera? And I went running into that kitchen. I started taking pictures. And when I came back to the table, I looked, and I had a man's face on the floor. Then I get home, and I'm going through all my pictures. I transfer them into my computer, and I have a, how would I call it, a ghostly figure down the whole right side of one of my pictures.
Oh, yeah, I'm big time
into paranormal.
I never was until I started to read, you know, many different authors, and I have read quite a bit. And I think the fun part about being a book reviewer is the fact that, A, I don't have to ever buy books, ever.
Yeah.
I haven't bought a book in forever. I just email the publishing companies, or they email me, or they just like these two books just showed up, and you never know what I'm going to get, and which is great. But also, what's great is that I'm getting books that I would not buy. I get books from, you know, in different genres and different self-help and memoir and historical fiction, and I'm getting things that normally when I would go into a bookstore, I would never think to buy them. And I'm so glad that I've been exposed to so many different types of books. I mean, like yesterday I read The Path of 300 by Greg Fucci, and I'm going to say it because the book is a true story. He works in Home Depot. He was an architect, and he took a sailboat, and he went from North Carolina to the Bahamas. And then he went from North Carolina to Lisbon. And the story is really interesting with a whole bunch of poems in it at the end. And, yeah, that was one of the books I read in Zap Time, too, yesterday. That was just one of the two and a half that I read, yeah.
Wow.
I was on a slow day. If my eyes bother me, I can't read two or three. But, yeah, I enjoyed that.
Memoirs?
Yeah, memoirs. I read memoirs.
I started writing my memoirs in the early 70s, and it's up to like 700 pages.
You don't want to read 700 pages, trust me. You want to do it in parts.
it's in a 4-inch binder and a 5-inch binder, and I can't close the covers. And it's not only is it stories, it's photographs, memorabilia, newspaper articles, all about my whole family. And it's going to my great-granddaughter, who will be 7 years old next month.
Oh, that is so nice. But you should take parts of it and publish it in parts. I find that when I read memoirs, that if they're more than 300 and some odd pages, it gets to be very, very long.
Yes.
I've read a couple of books, I won't say which ones, that were over 900 and 800 pages.
Oh.
And, you know, after reading almost 800 and some odd books, sometimes you can say the same thing in less time. So every month I come up with my picks for the month. And the books that I have read this week, just over the weekend I read 8, people.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It takes me 6 months to read one.
No, I'm my mother. Is my mother. My mother made me read 8 books a week and take notes on them. That's
good
how
for
come
her.
I write. Well, that's how come. That's how come I read so fast, because she and I take notes when I read. I still do.
Mm.
because she would say to me, you know, you have to take notes when you're reading so that if the teacher says to you, you have to write a book report, well, then my notes were there. I never had to worry.
Sure.
And it's I sat there with Cheryl's book. I sat there with yours. The reason why I don't read PDF is because I like to have the book in front of me. My eyes start to burn on my computer if I read. I like to mark up the book and circle what I'm going to use in the review, and I have a notebook. And the guy in the dollar store knows that every Saturday I come in and buy 20 notebooks. And the next week I come back and buy 20 more notebooks. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I do. You know what? I have a photographic memory, and I can remember everything that's in a book. You know, after I read it, you know, you slip, your mind goes, whatever. But, I do. So I can read a whole bunch of books in an hour. But to be very honest, I read every word, as you could tell. And my reviews are detailed, but I don't write spoilers. And once in a while, you know, I might slip something in by accident. I won't change my reviews, but if somebody says to me, you know, that's a spoiler, could you take it out? Yeah, of course, I don't want it to be in there. I don't want to write a review that's going to give things away, because then that's not right.
Yeah.
So besides I Have a Secret being one of my topics, and besides Is Your Mother-in-Law Under the Bed topics, I read a story about Woodstock, and the author's coming on the show in February. It's called Goodbye, Emily, by Michael Murphy. He worked in an assisted living, and he's going to talk about Alzheimer's because one of the characters has it. And I'm an expert at that because of my mom, and I wrote 3 books on it. Path of 300 by Greg Fucci was really great. Finding Jane by Brenda Sequa was about her life being abused by her husband and several other, and her parents. And I found that that book was really, as an educator and as a licensed reporter, I've reported child abuse, and unfortunately in every case I was right. That's the scary part, is, but I didn't even hesitate. So if educators out there, if you're not sure, report it. The worst that'll happen is you'll say you're sorry, but you might be saving a child's life. Yeah, you did. The Key of Justice by Dennis Carstens. And this is going to crack people up, because the book is about sadomasochism and S&M, and it had conversation. It's called The King of Pain by Larry Kahn. It's probably one of the best books I've read in a long time. So those are just 5 of the ones I read over the weekend, except for yours that I read today. that I've read. What I do is that every Thursday I choose one book that I read, and of course I didn't do it today because I've been busy doing this, that to be book of the week. And what I do is I ask the author to please send me a bio, and I put it on my site. So I have a site on Facebook called Reviewing Your Book. And Cheryl just friended me, so I could add Cheryl to the site. And I can add, if you friend me on Facebook, if you have a Facebook thing, then I can add you to the site. And then you can ask anybody on the site to review it, to review your book if they want. You can put your links and your events and anything else that you want on the site. As like I said, as long as it's positive, it goes there. And I read everything. For those people that don't think they're friends online, I could do it from my phone. I can approve things from my cell phone. I taught myself how to do it. And I really want to thank the people at Verizon for getting my contacts back on my phone so fast. Thank you so very much, because my new phone didn't have any contacts, and I would not know how to get to anybody or the publicist or anyone until they fixed it today. So thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it. Okay, I have a few more questions for everybody before we close. This has been fun, I have to tell you. First of all, Barbara, I want to thank you a million times for doing this.
No problem. I'm retired. Got plenty of time.
Well, I wasn't sure if you were there, and I knew Cheryl was coming on. And then I'm saying, you know, this is going to be, it's more fun with 2 authors. And Lisa Bennett was supposed to be on with Eco-Literate, and I thought about it, and I said she had another engagement, and it just worked out better, because these 2 books sort of lend themselves to each other, whereas talking about the environment with the mystery just sort of didn't go. And so she's coming on February 7th with John Land, the author of Pandora's Temple. Wait till you read that. Oh, my God. I get the best stuff to read, let me tell you. I really do. I'm just lucky.
Good.
Yeah, I do. I get the best authors, too. But, yeah, you know, I have this warped sense of humor. What can I say? So, Cheryl, you said before that you don't use an outline, right?
Yes, I know.
You just write. You know, there are some New York Times bestselling authors, Iris Johansson and Tess, the same thing. They just write, and the characters sort of tell them what they want to do. Especially Eve Duncan, she runs her life. So when you write something, you don't pick the chapters either? You just write it and then decide the chapter titles after?
Every once in a while, I will have an idea for the chapter, but it never ends up turning out exactly like. I might kind of know the direction the book is going in, but as far as what's going to happen chapter to chapter, I really don't know. And I think it was hard for me to do that at first because I was going against every belief I had about how I should write. But now it's helpful to me because when I'm reading someone else's book and I'm getting surprised about all the stuff in their book, then it's easy for me to go like, I love this. This is great. And what a great writer and what good writing. But when I was making notes with my own writing, I couldn't tell when I was writing it if I thought it felt really good because I thought it was too pre-planned. So that's why I like just off-the-cuff writing and allowing the character to just have that adventure from chapter to chapter. And I can get up and go, yeah, I like how that turned out. I think that's going to work out really well. So I love it.
I can see Edith and Andrew telling you what to say, Barbara.
Oh, yeah. They were sitting on my shoulder, whispering in my ear.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have to have an outline because I do have time spans where, like, for instance, the shower, the wedding shower was going to be in 2 weeks. And I had to use an outline to make sure that it didn't end up being a day and a half later, you know?
I see what you're saying. Well, I when I write, I usually do the same thing. I'll just write suggestions and ideas, and then what happens is, unfortunately, sometimes I just change the whole chapter, and it's never the same thing that I that originally we're going to write about. Yeah, it's usually something different. But I'm very excited. I should announce my next book is coming out this month. Yay! Bertha and Tilly, Sisters Forever, is coming out this month, and it's two stories about growing up with my mother and my sister. Both of them passed away last year. So, so my sister was my partner in crime, and my mother, well, you have to read it to believe what she did.
Yeah.
And, she was hysterical. And the book, Bertha and Tilly, Sisters Forever, the second one that is coming out this month, and the first 17 chapters was my book called Bertha Fights Back, and it's dedicated to 9/11.
Oh.
And it's a true story because growing up, I was the most perfect child, and then I joined a gang. This is all true.
Wow.
I mean, some of the stuff that happened, I made up and I sort of embellished it. But some of the stuff with Bertha, who was me, I was an overweight kid, not anymore, growing up, and I got fought back, kids, and I wouldn't tolerate bullies. So this story tells what happens when somebody goes bad and then things go sour as a result of non-tolerance, and when kids have to learn that they have to get along with people of different races. This is why I wrote the story. The other ones are just my faux pas, my dancing lessons, my bowling and stuff, and what a klutz I am till this day. So I sort of poke fun at myself, but it is funny. And my mother had her own things, and every time the doctor came, he liked to give two shots of penicillin. So when you read Two Cheeks Are Better Than One, which I might share with some people, I may put it out on one of my sites to share the story. It's a riot. So I'm excited. That's my 10th title. It's coming
great.
Out. And I tried.
At least you didn't take a gun to school.
No,
today?
I know. That
well,
is
they
so...
had another one today in California.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
You know what? It's so sad. And I worked in a New York City public school for all my life. And when my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was the saddest day of my life because I knew not that I had to take care of her, which I did for 10 years, but that I had to retire. And, I worked in a tough area in the Bronx. And I never worried about walking into the school with somebody with a gun. It was scary. It was the kids were tough, and I was a dean, and I'm 5 feet tall. At that time, it was 180. Now I'm 108 pounds, and Yeah, some of my friends were black belts in karate, so we knew how to handle. I had no problem. I walked in and
sure.
they said, "Oh, Miss, she's here," and I go like, "You're not going to mess with me because that would be a mistake." They didn't. It was, but I was tough. But they knew I loved them, and I still love my students. And they Facebook me all the time, and they'll, you know, say this is, you know, they'll say hi or we love you, Mrs. Lewis. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't know how to read. I go, "No, just don't ever forget that and keep reading," and. Yeah, I'm proud of what I did, and I'm proud of being, you know, an educator. It's the most wonderful profession in the world, seriously. For those people that don't think so, it's great. It's not the same maybe now as it was back, you know, when I retired, but still, the kids need people that really love them and care, and
yeah.
teachers need to be given the right to teach and not worry about all those lovely tests and stuff
That's
like
right.
that.
That's
yeah,
right.
So I was a reading specialist. I still am, and what makes me happy is when my nephews call me to help them with their high school homework and Shakespeare and stuff like that. So I still get into it. But I want to thank you both. Thank you so very, very much. Cheryl, I just emailed PJ. She emailed me to make sure that everything was going fine, and she is sending me the book. I just
great, great.
Now. The greatest part of doing what I do is that I don't have to ask twice. They just send it. And I think the most exciting thing yesterday was getting, you know, any book that I get, you know, from any author is great. And I really think that they're all fantastic. But when they sent me Private Berlin by James Patterson, I went, oh, okay, this is good. But when they sent me Al Roker's new book, I was like, oh, my God. And I didn't ask for it. I don't know how they found me to get it. I don't know who the publicist is because they never put a name in it. But I'll get to it because I've got, you know, indie authors to read first. And I've got everybody, you know, everybody else. So it's whatever comes wherever, you know, whatever line. But when your book comes out, Barbara, I want to read it.
Okay.
And
I just sent you a copy.
Yeah, and for those people that don't know, I have a new service. No, I don't charge for book reviews because Amazon people, I don't charge for book reviews. Hello? Is that doing that again?
Yeah,
it
was. Oh.
Yeah, I know. It's starting to act ridiculous. Okay, my new service is that, but I can't even say it anymore. If you need your book critiqued before it comes out, I'm going to wait till it stops again. I can
you
critique
wait.
It for if you need your book critiqued before it comes out, and you want to know about the plot and you want to know if the story flows and stuff like that, that's something that I do. And then if somebody emails me, I'll tell them what it involves and, you know, what the quest is. I'm doing one for someone that just sent me his book, and I'm reading it for plot, story flow, content, whatever. So if you're not sure before it gets published, and it's not a book review, it's to see, you know, whether, you know, something should be changed, if the characters flow, whatever. That's something that I also do, and you can find out more about it on Michigan Avenue Media, run by Marsha Cook and Virginia Grenier, The World of Ink, that gives me my show. And I don't know what that was just now or who that was, but that was annoying. And we're very happy that whatever it was that stopped. So I'm hoping that, Barbara, when your next book comes out, I'm going to read it and have you back on the show. And Cheryl, PJ is sending me your book, so whenever you can schedule another interview, you'll let me know. And
great.
It will be great. I will tell everybody that next Wednesday, David Derricott and Eric Sonnenschein will be on the show. And okay, and Eric's book is Ad Nomad, and it's about the ad industry, and it's a riot. David's book is Internal Security. And it's a murder mystery, and it's really interesting. The next day, I'm going to have John Augustine and Brenda Perlin on, and they're going to talk about wife and husband abuse and some other things about the books of true stories. So that should be really interesting. The week after, I've got one of my favorite people, Elliot Patterson, Mandarin Gate, and Alan Topol, The Spanish Revenge. And at the end of the month, The Persecution of Mildred Dunlap, which is a very interesting story about two women that have a relationship and living in the Old West. It's really interesting. Also, we have our Delaney might be on to talk about her book. And we have a man that was in the Vietnam War and fought in the Vietnam War, Ord Elliott. So that's just this month. I won't tell you next month because I'll tell you next time. So, Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
It's been great. Thank you. This has been so much fun. And when PJ sends me the other book and I review it, maybe we could set something up for either March or April.
That is perfect.
That would be great too. Is Barbara there? Or is she gone? Well, I'll email her. I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 3, and next Thursday at 4. And have a good night, everybody. And Bethany, thank you so much. And we're going to be doing a show, and Bethany's going to be on it in March. We're going to talk about women's history and outstanding women writers. And she's an outstanding women writer, Bethany Cross. And we're going to have a whole bunch of Smackers show. Maybe you'll do the show with us that day. We're going to have outstanding women writers, and then we're going to talk about women in history that we think are fantastic. So we're going to all pick one person in history that we want to say why she's our favorite, you know, historical person. And then we could talk about women writers because it's Women's History Month, and as an educator, you know I'm going to say that. So everybody have a great week, and I'll see you next week, and good night.
Bye, Franny.